Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. O Supreme, You are independent in Yourself and do not take help from others. Through Your own potency, You create this cosmic manifestation and enter into it. Those who are advanced in Krishna consciousness, who are fully in knowledge of the authoritative Shastra, and who, through the practice of Bhakti Yoga, are cleansed of all material contamination, can see with clear minds that although You exist within the transformations of the material qualities, Your presence is untouched by these qualities. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 9:10, Maya Jakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam Hetuna Nena Konteya Jagatpi Parivartate. This material nature, working under My direction, O son of Kunti, is producing all moving and unmoving beings. By its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. The material energy creates, maintains, and devastates the entire cosmic manifestation because of directions given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who enters this universe as Garbho Dakshaya Vishnu, but is untouched by the material qualities. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord refers to Maya, the external energy which creates this material world, as Mama Maya, My energy, because this energy works under the full control of the Lord. These facts can be realized only by those who are well-versed in Vedic knowledge and advanced in Krishna consciousness. Om Agyanat Marandasya Agyananjara Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sarikoda Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So today we're back to Srimad Bhagavatam. For the best part of 2 weeks, isn't it, we've been discussing the personalities of the Panchatattva. So, Srimad Bhagavatam, just to recap where we're at, the chapter's entitled The Demigods and Demons Declare a Truce. So the demigods have been harassed by the demons. They've approached Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma has approached Lord Vishnu on the ocean of milk. Lord Vishnu has manifested himself before Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma, in his transcendental ecstasy and realization, is offering prayers to Lord Vishnu. So these prayers, there's a lot in these prayers. Like, for example, I think there's eight verses of prayers. And the entire transcendental Vedic knowledge is compressed into these verses. So there's a lot in these verses. It's described that the Bhagavad Gita is the summary of the Upanishads in a very condensed form. And because it's spoken on a battlefield, it's even more condensed because time was short. So there's 700 odd verses in the Bhagavad Gita. So you can imagine the Upanishads in its most compressed form. About 700? There's 18 chapters in the Bhagavad Gita, the Upanishads' knowledge compressed. Now we have 8 verses describing that knowledge. So you can imagine how concentrated this knowledge is. So the verses like these are not really for skimming over. Verses like these are for spending a long time on, discussing deeply and meditating deeply on. The structure of Srimad Bhagavatam is very, very interesting. There's three categories, I suppose, in the Bhagavatam. When you first read the Bhagavatam, the first thing that pops out is pastimes, usually. It's stories, isn't it? It's a Purana, it's a Mahapurana. So a Purana is spoken in story form. So we have stories. We've got Dhruva Maharaj, we've got Prahlad Maharaj, we've got the demigods and the demons fighting. There's so many stories from the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. Even Canto 1 is the pastimes of the Pandavas. So these pastimes stand out. But within the pastimes, there is moral and philosophical instructions contained within the pastimes. For example, you can analyze the pastime of Prahlad Maharaj and Hiranyakashipu, the demoniac mentality and the devotee's mentality. So all these instructions are there, moral instructions. But within it, what we find is there's a pattern to every pastime that happens. As the devotee comes in contact with the Supreme Lord, he has full realization of the Lord, and he offers prayers to the Lord. Now those prayers are what the Bhagavatam is, actually. The pastimes is what attracts us in this age, because, you know, in this age everybody likes a story. So in previous ages, the Upanishads were like the raw transcendental knowledge that the Brahmanas had a qualification to enter into. But we don't have that qualification in this age. Generally, people don't have that qualification. So the pastimes of the devotees are purifying to hear and discuss. So through purification, we can enter into the Vedic knowledge. But the actual Vedic knowledge in the Srimad Bhagavatam is transmitted through the prayers. Dhruva Maharaj offered prayers. Prahlad Maharaj offered prayers. Kunti Devi offered prayers. Lord Brahma offered prayers. Everybody offers prayers in their state of realization. And the reason is that Shukadeva Goswami is given the tattva, Krishna tattva, through the prayers. So these prayers, every word of the prayers has very deep meaning. So devotees should really enter into these prayers, try and understand them, and try and understand what's being said in the prayers, because that's where the real nectar of Srimad Bhagavatam rests. Because that's the thing that gives self-realization and enlightenment. And it's enlightenment which gives the bliss of Krishna consciousness. Ultimately. So, Bhagavatam. So, what is Srimad Bhagavatam? There was a conversation I heard quite some time ago between Srila Prabhupada and some disciples. It was like a private darshan. And one female disciple asked Srila Prabhupada a question. She said, "Is there anyone like Joan of Arc in Srimad Bhagavatam?" Now, it was quite the mood was interesting to hear. It was quite an intimate mood. You could tell there was a lot of love being exchanged between Prabhupada and his disciples. And this female disciple, she obviously had a lot of affection for Joan of Arc. Otherwise, why would she ask the question? So Joan of Arc, if anybody doesn't know, is a patron saint of France, one of the patron saints of France. She, when she was 12 years old, she lived in the 15th century. When she was 12 years old, she had some visions of Saint Michael and the archangels, who instructed her to fight against the English and drive the English out of France. This is how the story goes. And when she was 17, she took control of the French armies and conquered the British. And then when she was 19, through some political espionage, she was charged with heresy and burned at the stake. So she was a very powerful personality at age 17 to lead the French army. And the French army had been annihilated by the British army for 100 years up to that point. So she got this vision and God gave her this instruction to go on what she considered a religious war. She was canonized in the 20th century and is considered a Roman Catholic saint. So the point is that she asked Srila Prabhupada, "Is there anyone like Joan of Arc in the Bhagavatam?" Now, when you hear that question, you would normally start thinking, anyone like Joan of Arc? Well, there's many Kshatriyas described in the Bhagavatam, but they're all men, generally. Is there any women who are fighters in the Bhagavatam? You would think in that way. I was thinking in that way, anyway. But Prabhupada's answer was very interesting. He said, Joan of Arc is Bhagavatam. Joan of Arc is Bhagavatam. So then he said, because Bhagavan means one who has fallen six opulences, strength, wealth, fame, knowledge, beauty, renunciation. Bhagavan, one who possesses all opulences, refers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Bhagavat means in relationship to Bhagavan. So Bhagavatam means in relationship to God, in relationship to Krishna. This is Prabhupada's explanation in that conversation. So Bhagavatam means the relationship, the relationship between the devotee and Krishna, the relationship between Krishna and Krishna's energies, his marginal energies, his external energy, his internal energy, everything relating to Krishna, everything relating to Bhagavan. That's Bhagavatam. That's what Bhagavatam is. So we need to understand that that's what Bhagavatam is. Bhagavatam is not just a book that we think like, well, one book is called Bhagavad Gita, one book is called Easy Journey to Other Planets, one book is called Srimad Bhagavatam. That's not what Bhagavatam is. Bhagavatam actually is the relationship between the Lord and his devotees. So that means Bhagavatam is transcendental knowledge, actually. It's realized transcendental knowledge. That's what Bhagavatam is. Now, the evolution of Srimad Bhagavatam in this universe, Lord Brahma found himself manifested on a lotus flower. He went outside of himself to the full extent of the universe trying to find the source of his existence. He couldn't find the source of his existence. In the same way that we find ourselves here in this body, we don't know what the source of our existence is. We try and trace it out externally. We say like, oh, well, my parents must be the source of my existence. So then their parents are the source of their existence. So now you can buy this thing, family tree program, you can get for a computer and it can trace your family tree because everyone wants to know what's the source of my existence. But Lord Brahma, he realized that he can't find the source of his existence outside of himself. So he went inside, he went into the lotus stem and tried to trace out the source of the lotus stem upon which he was situated. Still he couldn't find the source, because without the grace of Krishna, we can't even find the source of ourselves internally. So he heard a voice inside, Tapa, told him to practice austerities. So he practiced austerities for 100 years of the demigods. Then Lord Vishnu manifested himself before Lord Brahma in his full splendor, and he had full darshan of the spiritual world. Now, Lord Vishnu spoke Srimad Bhagavatam to Lord Brahma in four verses, the Chatur Shloki, Canto 2, Chapter 9, Text 33 to 36. Aham eva syaeva agre begins. Lord Vishnu told him that before this material world existed, only Narayan existed. After this material world ceases to exist, only Narayan will exist. Therefore, that which you see now is only Narayan, expanded in different forms. That was the first verse. Then he said, that which appears to be truth without me, you should know to be my illusory energy. Second verse. So there's four verses, Chatur Shloki, Bhagavatam. Now, Lord Brahma expanded these verses to Narada Muni when he explained Bhagavatam to Narada Muni. Narada Muni expanded to Vyasadev when he explained Bhagavatam. When Vyasadev explained Bhagavatam to Sukadev Goswami, he expanded again. And Sukadev Goswami expanded to Pariksit Maharaj, Srimad Bhagavatam. And all the acharyas, when they comment on Srimad Bhagavatam, it's an expansion of the Bhagavatam. So we can see the voluminous expansion that Srila Prabhupada has prepared under Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, there's been classes going on in ISKCON. You know, obviously Bhagavatam classes go on all over, but just within our own society, it's been going on for the last 45 years. Devotees have been expanding on Bhagavatam. So this is the nature of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's not just a book, it's transcendental knowledge. So to discuss Srimad Bhagavatam means that we should be entering into a connection with Krishna. That's the point. That's the whole point of it. We should be becoming self-realized and connecting with the Supreme Personality of Godhead through absorption in the Bhagavatam. So, transcendental knowledge and experience of God. That's what Bhagavatam is. So knowledge and experience, that means realization. That means that our relationship with Krishna is a real thing. It's not just a theoretical thing. It's not just situated on the platform of jnana. It's a fully realized transcendental taste. But this transcendental taste of our relationship with Krishna is dependent upon our knowledge of Krishna. For example, in Jayavadharma, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur states that the thing that's blocking us from moving from the Kanishtha Adhikari platform to the Majjhima Adhikari platform predominantly is attachment to karma and jnana. Yeah? Karma and jnana. So this jnana, this pursuit of knowledge is what's blocking us from moving to the more advanced stages. However, he also explains that in order to get to the advanced stages of devotional service, we have to be situated properly in Sambandha Jnana. Sambandha Abhideya Pyojana. We have to have knowledge of our relationship with Krishna. So we hear Anyabhilasatashu Nyam Jnana Karma Adhyanavritam. We hear it so often, we're free from karma and jnana, devotional services. But you can't enter into devotional service unless you're situated in Sambandha Jnana. So what's the difference? What's the difference? Prabhupada explains in the introduction to the Nectar of Devotion that that type of philosophical speculation, which ultimately leads to voidism or impersonalism, is called jnana. However, that type of philosophical speculation, which leads a person to be established in his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is welcome. So this is Sambandha Jnana, means knowledge of our relationship with Krishna. Sorry. So what's the difference? The difference is the difference between the body and the soul. The body means bhumirapalono vayu kamano buddhir evacha, mana buddhir ahankar, is part of the body. Straight away you reject the gross body. Gross body is rejected, we're not the body. We're not the mind also, we're not the intelligence. This is part of our body. Now this body has to be rejected, and jnana is that thought process which goes on in our body. Sambandha jnana is that thought process which goes on in our soul. Because the soul is sat-chit-ananda. It's chit. It's eternally aware. It's eternally conscious. Consciousness means knowledge, full knowledge of our own position and knowledge of Krishna's position. Chit, chit potency. So that knowledge is the knowledge of the soul. Krishna says, atmanyevatmana tushta, that the soul in the realized state is satisfied with the soul. The soul is satisfied with the super soul, Prabhupada describes. But atma is satisfied with atma. Atma rests in its own glory. The soul is self-sustained, self-manifested, and self-illuminated, and doesn't depend on anything else for its illumination. However, the material body requires illumination by the soul. And when the soul is reflected through the body, the chit potency of the soul becomes manifested through the intelligence of the material body. That intelligence, when it analyzes things separate from itself, is called jnana. That's jnana, that's knowledge. That's the knowledge that has to be rejected, is this process of trying to analyze things that's separate from myself, external to myself. Like you have this thing, you know, people come up, like you have a dead animal on the ground, and boys, we used to do it anyway as boys, you come up, you poke it with a stick. You know, you try and investigate, what's this about? Poke it with a stick, you know? And sometimes one of the boys will kick it, or you know what I mean? You investigate things in a very gross way. So that's what we do with Krishna. We come to Krishna, and we start trying to poke Krishna with a stick. What's Krishna like, you know? Is Krishna like this? Is Krishna like that? As if Krishna is something external to us. But Krishna is the supreme internal. In this, the first verse of Lord Brahma's prayers, the supremely most subtle of all extremely subtle things, verse 8 I think it was, the supremely most subtle of all extremely subtle things. Krishna is the seer. Krishna is the experiencer of all existence. We're objects of Krishna's experience. But we've turned everything around in the mirror image of the material world. We're coming to try and see Krishna. We come for darshan in the morning. Darshan means I'm going to come and see Krishna. That's not darshan. Darshan means Krishna sees us. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur used to say, don't act in such a way that you can see Krishna. Act in such a way that Krishna will be pleased to see you. Because that's our Svarup. Svarup means our eternal identity. Jivara Svarupahoya Nitya Krishna Das. We're Das. We're the object of Krishna's enjoyment, the object of Krishna's darshan. Krishna is not the object of our darshan. So we don't come and poke Krishna with a stick, so to speak, and try and figure out what's Krishna like. That's called jnana. That's what jnana is. Now, sambandha jnana means that awareness of my real position, that I'm Krishna's das, I'm Krishna's servant. There was one, one Maharaj, I can't remember who it was, he said, das, we say servant. Actually, das means more of a slave than a servant. A slave doesn't have any independence. A slave doesn't have any rights, doesn't have anything. A slave is owned. He's the property of his master. Srila Prabhupada explains this in his purports. He's the property of his master, and if his master so desires, then that master can kill that slave, and nobody, under the laws of the slave trade in America, that slave can be killed by the master. Just like if I own a glass vase, I can smash that vase if I want. So if I own a slave, I can kill that slave, and nobody can say anything to me because it's my property. That was the law in America, in the slave trade. Now, that's our position with Krishna. Ashlishya va padar vitam panasumam adarshna marma hatam karotaba. Whether you trample me under your feet, whether you kill me, whether you keep me alive, whatever you want to do, my position is that I am just an object of your gratification. That's our position. Now, it takes a long time to come to that point of surrender, obviously. But the beginning stage is sadhana bhakti. But to get off the sadhana bhakti stage, to get to the Majjhamadhikari stage, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that we need to assimilate this sambandha jnana. And sambandha jnana means this awareness of who I am, self-realization. For example, in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, there's a description of the qualifications of a disciple. First, a description of the qualifications of a guru, that a guru must be fully self-realized in full relationship with the Supreme Lord. And the disciple's qualifications are there. And the disciple, for all intents and purposes, is a realized soul, by that description. Chapter 10, text 6, 11th canto. You can look into it if you're interested. But it's like you're completely free from false ego, completely surrendered, knowledge of Shastra, knows he's not the body, all these things. Practically he's on the self-realized platform. That person, when he surrenders to a self-realized guru, tadvidi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshanti tadgyanam gyaninas tatvadarshipi, that person who can see the truth, can transmit knowledge to a person who's got the qualification to receive the knowledge. Receiving that knowledge means sambandhagyan, means we have an understanding of who we are. Who am I, actually? So who am I? Krishna says, or Srila Prabhupada says, you can't understand who you are without understanding Krishna. That will become apparent. You cannot understand who you are without understanding Krishna. Because Krishna is everything. Bahunam janmanamante gyanavanman prabhadite vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudulabha. Vasudeva sarvamiti. Krishna is everything. There's nothing that's not Krishna. There's nothing that's not Krishna. So therefore, to try and understand ourselves separate from Krishna is not possible. Because we're expansions of Krishna. Expansions of Krishna's marginal potency. So, in order to understand Krishna, we have to enter into relationship with Krishna. So, who Krishna is was a question. Knowledge and experience of Krishna. Knowledge and experience of God. Now, there's a verse in the Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text 11, which is a very important verse. Excuse me. Vedanti tat tattva vedas tattvam yajgyanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate. Everybody should know this verse. It's a very important verse because it explains who God is in one verse. In the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, there's a very concise explanation of who God is. It takes 30 verses for the Navayogendras in the conversation with Maharaj Nimi. It takes him 30 verses of very concentrated explanation. Now, Sukadeva Goswami is given in one verse who God is. Like, for example, generally in religions, there's three things. There's three things in religion. You say, I exist, the world exists, God exists. That's religion, isn't it? I'm here, I know I'm here, I know I'm existing. I can perceive that the world is existing, and I have some faith that beyond the world, God is existing. Three things, Ishvara, Jagat, Jiva. In all religions, Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, all religions are like that. Now, the Vedic religion is not like that. The Vedic religion doesn't deal with this threefold separation between Jiva, Ishvara, and Jagat. The Vedic religion says, Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Vedanta says, Vasudeva Sarvamiti, only Krishna exists. But Krishna has expanded himself in different ways. So, ordinarily in a religion, to try and understand God, we're trying to understand something separate from ourselves, something beyond this world, we say. But in Vedanta, we don't try and understand anything that's separate from ourselves. This is coming in the next verse. As one can derive fire from wood, milk from the milk bag of a cow, food grains and water from the land, and prosperity in one's livelihood from industrial enterprises, so by the practice of bhakti yoga, even within this material world, one can achieve your favor or intelligently approach you. Now, yogar manusha adiyanti hi tvam. Manusha means human beings. Manusha loka means a platform, the platform of existence of human beings. Yogar, by practice of bhakti yoga. Yogar manusha adiyanti achieve hi tvam. Certainly you. One can achieve you even within this world. So Krishna is not something to be achieved in the future. Krishna is not something to be achieved somewhere else, at some different place and time. Krishna is transcendental to all time and space. There's no time and space for Krishna. That means everything that exists is Krishna. And Krishna can manifest in full potency anywhere in his creation. For example, when Krishna descends, he appears in Gokul Vrindavan. So when he appears, that material energy becomes spiritual energy. He appears in his spiritual form. So there's no distinction between spirit and matter for Krishna. Krishna tells us there's a distinction between spirit and matter. Because we're conditioned, we have to make that distinction. But for Krishna, there's no distinction between spirit and matter. Krishna has allotted a certain corner of the spiritual world as the material world. He's covered over the spiritual energy by his Atma Maya, his Maya, and made it into the material world. That's what the material world is. It's a spiritual world covered by Krishna's illusory potency. So Krishna can manipulate his potencies. There's no spirit and matter for Krishna. So it's not that we have to try and find out God somewhere else and think that Krishna is beyond somewhere that we're going to get there when we die. That idea has to be rejected completely. Krishna consciousness means now, at this particular time, right here, right now, in the present moment, not in the past, not in the future, right here, right now, is your Krishna consciousness and your experience of Krishna. So, Jai Shishi Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai, Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, Gornitai Ki Jai. So, Prabhupada explains, Sukadeva Goswami explains, learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. So again in this verse we have Jnanam, Advaya Jnanam, this non-dual knowledge, Sukadeva Goswami says. Vedanti Tattvabit, one who knows the truth, knows that this non-dual substance, Advaya Jnanam, there's only one thing. That one thing is Krishna. There's only one thing, and it's known by different tattvabits, different self-realized souls who know the truth. They know this non-dual substance as Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. Three things. Now, Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, the absolute truth is both subject and object, and there is no qualitative difference there. Subject and object. There's no difference between, like in the material world, there's a difference between the subject and the object. Between a thing and the perceiver of the thing, there's a difference. But there's no difference in the spiritual world. Srila Prabhupada says, there's no qualitative difference there. Therefore, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan are qualitatively one and the same. The same substance is realized. Now, this substance means God. If you want to know what God is, that's this substance, is what Srila Prabhupada is calling God. This same substance is realized as impersonal Brahman by the students of the Upanishads, as localized Paramatma by the Hiranyagarbhas or the yogis, and as Bhagavan by the devotees. In other words, Bhagavan, or the personality of Godhead, is the last word in the absolute truth. The last word. Now, the last word means that if we have realization of Bhagavan, we automatically realize Brahman and Paramatma. It doesn't mean we reject Brahman and Paramatma, because the absolute truth exists in three features: Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Sabjyate. Sukadev Goswami, I'm not making it up, I'm just repeating what Sukadev Goswami said. Now, the last word of the absolute truth. Paramatma is the partial representation of the personality of Godhead, and impersonal Brahman is the glowing effulgence of the personality of Godhead, as the sun rays are to the sun god. Now, this is important, this next bit. Less intelligent students of either of the above schools sometimes argue in favor of their own respective realization. But those who are perfect seers of the absolute truth know well that the above three features of the one absolute truth are different perspective views seen from different angles of vision. Less intelligent persons, Srila Prabhupada says, sometimes argue in favor of their own perspective realization. But we should know that there's only one truth, and that truth is manifested to different people in different ways. Even Krishna, we talk of Bhagavan. Like, we separate Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. But who is Bhagavan? Who is Krishna? Who is Krishna? When Krishna entered the wrestling arena at Mathura, different people saw him in different ways, according to their relationship with him. Yeah. So Krishna was born in Mathura. He was transferred to Vrindavan. He enjoyed his childhood pastimes in Vrindavan. Then he went back to Mathura. Now, from day one, he was slaughtering people. But when he got to Mathura, he really let rip. Jarasandha attacked Mathura 17 times. Each time, he came with an army bigger than the army that was present on both sides at the Battle of Kurukshetra. That's quite massive. How many, like millions and millions of soldiers he attacked Mathura with. 17 times. Krishna went out on his own, slaughtered all of them. Single-handedly. There was rivers of blood flowing past Mathura with arms and elephants and heads. It's described the heads still had their gold jewelry on. You know, it was such a grotesque scene. Krishna slaughtered everyone. Then he manifested his pastimes as Ranchor. He pretended to be afraid, ran away. But really his intention was to move all his devotees to Dwarka. He set up a fortress at Dwarka and he became a very prominent prince and continued slaughtering people left, right and center. He married 16,108 wives. He had 10 boys and one girl with each one, isn't it? Then he manifested his dynasty within Dwarka. This is Krishna. Now, Krishna is a royal prince. Right? Now, at the solar eclipse, when all the residents in Vrindavan met Krishna, and then the pastime of Rathayatra, the original Rathayatra, took place. The pastimes of Vrindavan, the residents of Vrindavan met Krishna and the residents of Dwarka at Kurukshetra. And there's an amazing scene in the Krishna book, the relationship and the exchange between the residents of Dwarka and the residents of Vrindavan. Now, Mother Yashoda, when she saw Krishna, she took Krishna on her lap and fed him milk from her breast. Now, that's weird, isn't it? That's weird. This is a grown man. He's a grown man. He's slaughtered possibly a billion people. He's married to 16,108 wives. He's got sons and grandsons. He's a Kshatriya. He's fully bedecked in armor. The description of Krishna when he arrives at Kurukshetra. And then she takes him on her lap and feeds him with milk from her breast. What does this mean? This means that Krishna has unlimited forms. Advaitam, Achyutam, Anadim, Anantarupam. Anantarupam. He has unlimited forms simultaneously. So when we see that Krishna entered the wrestling arena in Mathura, and we see that everybody saw him differently, we can think, oh, that's just normal. Like, you know, a man goes home and his wife sees him in one way, his children see him another way. When he's at the office, his boss sees him in another way. That's just normal to see him in different ways. Yeah, true. But when a man goes home to visit his mother, he doesn't take on the form of a baby and suck milk from her breast. That doesn't happen. That means that Anantarupam, eternally existing forms. So Mother Yashoda, who is Krishna? Krishna is the baby of Mother Yashoda, eternally. Simultaneously, that same Bhagavan, that same Krishna, is the husband of the queens of Dwarka. He is the lover of the gopis of Vrindavan. Simultaneously. Anantarupam. These forms are going on simultaneously and they're unlimited. So it's not so straightforward as just I exist, the world exists, and God exists, and then I worship God, and then if I'm a good worshipper of God, then after I die, I'll go back to heaven, and I'll be... It's not so simple. It's not so straightforward. Krishna says, Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatpataha, chaktva deham punar janma, naiti ma meti so arjuna. Chaktva deham, deham is the body, chaktva means to give up. So chaktva deham means you have to give up your body. You're going to die, there's no doubt. This body has to end. Our body's already ended so many times. My baby body has ended, and then I had a boy's body. My boy's body has ended, now I've got an adult's body. This adult body is going to end, and I'm going to have an old man's body, and then an old man's body is going to end. Tyaktva deham. Now, punar janma. Punar means again. Janma means birth. That means you have to get another body. There's no doubt about it. Punar janma. You have to take another birth, Krishna says. Tyaktva deham, punar janma. Then, not et, not here. Krishna says, he's talking about someone who, Janma Karma Chamedivyam, one who understands the truth of my appearance and activities. He says, when you give up this body, your next body is not ET, it's not here. Mam ET is with me, Krishna says. Sa, such a person, Arjuna. He's talking to Arjuna. Chakva Deham Punarjanma, Naiti Mam ET, so Arjuna. This means going back home, back to Godhead. This is the back home, back to Godhead verse. Janma Karma Cha Me Divyam, the divine. Divyam means transcendental, means that although Krishna's a fearless warrior who slaughters millions of soldiers, still he maintains his original form as the baby who sucks milk from the breast of Mother Yashoda. This is Divyam. And this is Janma Karma. This is Krishna's Janma, Krishna's appearance and Krishna's activities have to be understood. Janma Karma Chame Divyam, Evam Yo Veti Tatvata. Tatva in truth means transcendental. Just like Vedanti Tattva Vidas Tattvam. So we have to understand these things in truth. Who is Krishna? What are the features of Krishna? So Prabhupada continues. The one absolute truth, different perspective views seen from different angles of vision. Now, as it is explained in the first shloka of the first chapter of Bhagavatam, the supreme truth is self-sufficient, cognizant, and free from the illusion of relativity. In the relative world, the knower is different from the known. For example, if a person's an electrical engineer or a microphone engineer, he might know all about this microphone. There's a difference between him and the microphone. Yeah, there's a difference in the material world. There's always a difference between the knower and the known. There's a separation. But in the absolute truth, both the knower and the known are one and the same thing, Prabhupada says. Now, in the absolute truth, both a knower and a known are one and the same thing, means that Krishna and a jiva are one and the same thing, Srila Prabhupada says. He says here, in the material world, there is a duality of inferior and superior energy, whereas in the absolute realm, both a knower and a known are of the same superior energy. So, if the soul, the knower and the known, Krishna and the individual soul, are one and the same thing, then how can there be relationship? How can Mother Yashoda take Krishna on her lap and feed him with milk if they're one and the same thing? So there's varieties. There's varieties within the spiritual world. But we should know that those varieties are not the varieties that we perceive in this world. This world, the varieties are based on separation. Variety in this world means that something is different from me. But variety in the spiritual world means that something is the same as Krishna. So, qualitatively one, we say. But this qualitatively one is significant because unless we come to the platform of qualitative oneness, then our spiritual life is just a religion. That's the problem. And that religion is called Kanishtha Adhikari, Prakrita Bhakti. So if anybody has any desire to make advancement towards the higher realms of devotional service, this understanding has to come. Because the vision of separation is called Pritak Drishti. Pritak means separate. Material world, everything is separated. Samadrishti means samadhi. Samadhi. Dhi means intelligence. Sama means oneness. Samadhi means samadhi. So samadrishti means to see everything in relationship to Krishna. Vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabha. So this samadhi is necessary in order for us to attain love of God. So if we want to attain love of God, we have to take this very seriously. I'm running a bit short of time, but just briefly, I'm a bit of a waffler, so I just want to demonstrate how this relates to today's verse. Verse 10, my dear Lord, who are always fully independent, this entire cosmic manifestation arises from you, rests upon you, and ends in you. Your lordship is the beginning, sustenance, and end of everything, like the earth, which is the cause of an earthen pot, which supports the pot, and to which the pot, when broken, finally returns. So Lord Brahma is making this point that there's nothing that's not Krishna. There can be nothing that's not Krishna because everything comes from Krishna. So everything is Krishna's energies. Therefore the energy and the energetic are in one sense non-different. O Supreme, you are independent in yourself and do not take help from others. Through your own potency you create this cosmic manifestation and enter into it. So Krishna exists. He manifests this cosmic manifestation and he enters into the manifestation. So this is Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. His energy becomes the material manifestation, Brahman. He enters into it, Paramatma, and he maintains his own personal independence, Bhagavan. Those who are advanced in Krishna consciousness, who are fully in knowledge of the authoritative Shastra, and who, through the practice of Bhakti Yoga, are cleansed of all material contamination. Material contamination means Pritak Drishti, means seeing things separate from Krishna. That's our material contamination. Can see with clear minds that although you exist within the transformations of the material qualities, your presence is untouched by these qualities. So Krishna and the individual soul are qualitatively one. So Lord Brahma is saying that although we have this body, our soul is untouched by this body. So if we're trying to attain to self-realization by purifying this body, we're wasting our time. We're wasting our time. Purification of this body is necessary so that we can come to the understanding that I'm not this body and that I'm already pure. That's the point. We don't become pure. Lord Chaitanya says, Chaito Dharpanam Arjunam, we're cleansing the mirror of the mind. He says that Krishna consciousness is not something artificial. It's not an artificial imposition on the mind. It's a natural state of the living entity. The only thing is that because of our contaminated mind, we think that it's an artificial thing, that we have to become Krishna conscious. We don't have to become Krishna conscious. We just have to stop not being Krishna conscious. We have to realize that this body is not Krishna conscious. As long as I identify with this body, I won't be Krishna conscious. And if I try to become Krishna conscious with this body, I'm wasting my time. Atman eva atmana tushta. The soul is Krishna conscious. That's the point that Lord Brahma is making. I could go on, but it's 8:30, so I better stop. Any questions or comments?